Not sure what the weather's like near you, but spring has sprung in Texas. And with it comes outdoor activities, spring cleaning, and other things. Some of them are fun, some of them not so fun, but all of them could have potential hidden dangers for your pets. So join us today as we explore crucial tips for safety for pet parents this spring. Stay tuned. You're listening to Starlight Pet Talk, a podcast for pet parents who want the best pet care advice from cat experts, dog trainers, veterinarians, and other top pet professionals who will help you live your very best life with your pets. Welcome to Starlight Pet Talk. I'm your host, Amy Castro, and my guest today is none other than Dr. Zoo. You've met her at least twice if you've listened to past episodes. She is one of our favorite veterinarians, and she is the owner and lead veterinarian at Family Animal Hospital in Friendswood, Texas, which is where we take all of our rescue animals to get their loving veterinary care. All right, so Dr. Zoo, thank you for being with us again.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to the spring and summer, so this is going to be real relevant.
I'm not looking forward to the summer. Not
no,
Texas. It's too hot and miserable. But I do like the spring, and I feel like everybody gets all gung-ho and excited about a lot of stuff in the spring, and it can be good and bad for our pets.
And we're not prepared, yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of did some researching about some of the areas that we might want to talk about, and the first one that came up was allergies.
Yep.
I know that you and I have dealt with a mutual person through the rescue whose dog is allergic to everything outside,
and the world.
Grass and trees and everything else.
Pollens, molds, dust mites, fleas.
Fleas. Any kind of quick or easy advice for dealing with pet allergies, or how do I even know if my pet's got allergies?
Yeah, good question. I think what surprises people is that pets are expressing their allergies through their skin, their ears, sometimes maybe through drainage from the eyes or nose, but most of the time it's actually licking their feet or scratching their armpits. And that's how you, it's your first clue that there's allergies, ear infections. Like, he keeps getting ear infections. He doesn't swim. Why is this happening? Allergies is usually the reason. And so, yeah, that's the first thing. And the other thing to notice is, does it happen certain times of the year, like spring?
Yeah.
Some animals, like dust mites, let's say you're allergic to that. Well, that's all year round. But some animals, for sure, when those oaks, trees start producing all the pollen, or the pine does, that your car windshield is yellow, your dog will start scratching or licking their feet, things
yeah.
like that.
And there's testing that it can do on animals,
awesome
right?
Testing, yeah. Just like in people, we can do on a blood test, look for things like pollen, mold, dust mites, as I said, flea allergies, even allergies to food items. And that,
yeah, that's a whole other ball.
Yeah, that's but, maybe not spring, but that is definitely going to be on there.
But it comes out in that report, which is
yes.
pretty cool.
Yeah, it is a very neat report. Yeah. So you can certainly test that way.
And then you have to kind of adjust accordingly. I'm assuming if my dog is allergic or my cat, if I've got an outdoor area for my cat, they're allergic to grass.
Yeah.
I mean, other than eliminating the grass.
Yeah. And another point is that maybe they're not an outdoor cat, but that stuff does come inside. We open our doors or windows, it's on our clothes, you know, and you wake up sneezing in the morning from your allergies, they might wake up itching and shaking their ears. And so, yeah, it could be whether they're indoor or outdoor pet expressed on their skin or ears.
Yeah. So it's definitely something to talk, you know, find out.
Yep.
Number one, what it is, and then talk to your veterinarian about options for treating, whether it's medication, shampoos, a combination thereof.
Yeah, and you know, a lot of the medications are the same as us. One of our first go-tos is antihistamines, you know, from Benadryls or Tec or Claritin. Your doctor can help you find the right dose for that, but at the same time, you know, it doesn't have to be something super expensive or unsafe. Those things are very easy to get and very safe for our pets, too.
Okay. One of the things that I thought about, and somebody had asked about this, was we shouldn't just randomly give over-the-counter because not all of it's safe for our
Correct.
Pets.
Yeah. There'll be some crazy little nuances, and so you definitely want to ask your doctor about it, your veterinarian, because, you know, does this liquid Zyrtec have xylitol in it to sweeten it for kids? But xylitol is very dangerous to cats and dogs, and so it's just little things like that that's really helpful to double-check with your veterinarian.
Yeah, so be careful. Just like if you wouldn't just randomly give it to your child, you probably shouldn't give it
exactly. If you have a hesitation, you know, listen to that gut instinct, and that would be probably the best thing to do to communicate with your doctor.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned fleas and ticks and things like that.
Yeah.
So when I was thinking about, you know, the hazards that are out there, you've got the insects.
Yep.
So
bee stinging insects like bees and wasps.
Yes. My dog got stung in the face. She already has
Did
a fat, chunky face. So she got stung the other day by a bee.
Yes.
And we thought it was because she got into a fight with another dog the day before. So we thought it was swelling from that.
Yeah.
And it turned out it was a swarm of bees that was hanging
out
in the tree.
A whole swarm? Oh, my gosh.
That's because we moved our bees.
Oh. You have bees.
We have bees
how
now.
Cool,
yeah, that's a whole other episode. But yeah, one of them got, I guess, a little annoyed with the move and kind of decided to hang out in a tree. So they were chasing everybody around the yard.
Yeah, and so keep that Benadryl on hand for those emergencies, that's for sure. But yeah, we're going to see more of those in the spring for sure. And that's just being observant. You know, a lot of times the reaction can be just a red spot or hives or something like that. But rarely or occasionally you'll get anaphylactic reactions like a
just
person.
Just like people, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And those guys need to go see the doctor for an epinephrine or a steroid or a Benadryl injection to get in there quickly. But, you know, call first because they might say, hey, if you're already home, get so-and-so amount of milligrams of Benadryl to start the process because it's going to take you X amount of time to get to us. And that can really help in a situation like that. It's hard to know sometimes that it's an anaphylactic reaction. Sometimes, most of the time, I will say, owners will say, well, she just came in from outside to potty and then she just vomited and just kind of laid there lethargic. And that those can be signs of anaphylactic reaction. So, you know, that kind of detail is important, especially that she just came from outside or I let her out to potty and then she came inside and did this weird thing. Mm-hmm. That can help us figure out what the underlying cause is. But yes, at home, I think, again, getting with your doctor for a good Benadryl dose is always something good to keep in your doggy medicine box or a little sticky note on your refrigerator or magnetized to the refrigerator.
Yeah.
That kind of quick, easy access would be helpful.
Yeah. And we'll hit on the idea of having a first aid kit because that's something you'd think I should know that. And we have a lot of stuff for the rescue, but it's like, where is it? It's not necessarily consolidated in one kit. Fleas and ticks, like, you know, I know that I've not had a lot of run-ins with ticks, but, you know, a lot of times people have questions about, you know, should we do flea shampoo? Should it be the sprays? Is it over-the-counter good enough? Do I need prescription?
Yeah.
You know, what about these shots that last a long time? Heartworm, you know, with mosquitoes.
Yeah.
And I know that's a lot in one big category, but.
No, I think you have some good framework for us to work from there. And that is that there are a lot of products for fleas and ticks and it can get confusing, like what's good for my pet. And sometimes, again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but you want to probably check in with your doc. But some generalities, the older stuff that's been around a long time, and we know these brands like Frontline and Advantage and their topicals, though they can kill fleas, fleas have seen these over the years and they actually become resistant to them. And so often I find that if someone needs to use those, often for maybe a financial reason or maybe an oral something isn't good for them, then sometimes we even recommend using them every 2 weeks because that's how resistant the fleas have gotten to them. Although they're labeled for 1 month, it's just the animal's genetics have changed over time and they can fight off that Frontline or Advantage. So my recommendation is usually prescription oral flea meds. There's a bunch of them out now. They're all very thoroughly tested to be safe. Anytime something is new on the market, you may get some, I would call it internet gossip about whether or not it's safe or not. You know, the best thing to do is to, you know, say, hey, my vet knows my pet and they'll know what's best for my pet. There are a few that you don't want to use if your pet has a history of seizures or at least safely introduce them in a certain way with animals that have a history of seizures. So there's that. And that's on the newer medicines. And most of those are orals. They can even last up to 3 months as far as flea protection goes, which is, can be kind of convenient in certain cases.
Don't you also want to look at, and I don't know how the orals work, but I know one of the things that I've run into is the difference between, does it kill fleas on contact? Does it kill flea after it bites? Does it kill eggs? Because some people, I've literally had people call the rescue to surrender a pet because they can't get this skin thing under control.
Oh, skin thing.
And but it's a reaction to the fleas and they'll say, well, I do X, Y, Z. And it's like, but you're not killing eggs or whatever.
Yeah, you're right. Really, I think the biggest thing is treating the pet in the environment. So the eggs, most of them are in the environment. And so that can be things like certain kind of sprays or carpet powders, things like that. And certainly getting a professional is always helpful as far as your environment goes. And I would say, you know, 80-90% of the fleas and their different stages of growth, including their eggs and larvae, are going to be off the pet in the environment. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that's important. And then, yes, there are definitely some that are more likely to kill a flea after one bite versus like 10 bites. And then the topicals, in theory, can kill a flea if they haven't bitten. So there's that. And it just depends. Like, for example, you would think like the orals, they do have to bite the pet at least once for those fleas to die from those animals. But the animal with an oral versus, let's say, an older topical like Frontline or Advantage will do better if they're flea allergic with one of those orals than they would with a topical, because it just takes a lot longer for the flea to maybe get some of the Frontline chemical on them and finally die. Mm-hmm. And in that time, they've bitten the animal 10, 20 times, you know, in a short period of time. I think it's within 5 minutes or something like that, they'll have bitten the animal 30 times at that point in time. Mm-hmm. They're very quick to just
That's why they're on there, is to get the blood, right?
And get the blood, fill up, and jump off and go and lay their eggs somewhere. Yeah. You typically is their life cycle. So that is interesting that even though, yes, a pet does have to be bitten for the oral meds to work, they still work better than the topical ones do, which, you know, again, is only 10% of the problem, because you do got to treat the environment. And the environment might be inside, like carpet, or it could be outside. You know, she loves to go and romp under these bushes. Yeah, she likes to go and chase the bunnies in the backyard. And so you may have to treat that area as well.
Yeah. I think one of the things that I always had learned, too, about, you know, knowing what comes into your yard to bring fleas in the first place, like squirrels are big, you know, basically squirrels, all the critters, if you got four-legged critters coming into your yard, they're bringing fleas and they're bringing ticks if you're in an area with ticks.
That's right. And I mean, there are germs within the bodies of those fleas and ticks that not only can cause your pet to really get seriously ill, like certain kinds of anemia causing bacteria, even things like mycoplasma, Lyme disease, cat scratch fever, those sorts of things can be carried in the mouth parts of fleas and ticks. Mm-hmm. And that can affect a person too. So not just your pet, but for your own safety, I think it's worth it to do some flea control, tick control. Ticks are funny. They have this like weird, sometimes every 2 year life cycle. So you may have like 1 year, just this terrible tick bloom, and then several years of nothing. And then 2 years later, all of a sudden there's another bloom. It can be just because, and this is hard, yucky to think of, but they can be living like in our walls or in the bricks of our walls. They can live in trees and tree trunks. Or let's say, you know, you guys get a new livestock animal, even, for example, livestock carry them, and certainly deer. If you have any deer in your yard, they carry a lot of type ticks, and they can be in cycles too. Maybe depending on heat and moisture, you know, some years were more drought, some years were more wet, you know, will sometimes affect their life cycle too. Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a super quick break and we'll be right back. Our pets aren't in our lives nearly long enough. So isn't it important that we build the best relationship with them that we can? Let us help. Get our exclusive guide, 10 Tips for Building a Lifelong Bond with Your Pet, and start transforming your relationship today. Get it at bit.ly/bondwithmypet.
Now, I know talking about heartworm as, you know, kind of related to this, I know that there are medications that cover fleas, ticks, and heartworm, I think. But I really want to address, because again, those are things that people can talk about with their vet as to what's appropriate. But there's still a lot of people who believe that I only need to give heartworm treatment certain times of the year. And I think that may be true in certain parts of the country.
Correct.
But not here in Texas, friends. And I know people are, you know, so you really need to know.
Yeah. If you've ever been bitten by a mosquito in your home in the dead of winter, and you have, because I have, and it usually starts with this little buzzing, annoying noise that wakes me up in the middle of the night, and then smacking myself trying to kill this mosquito, well, your pets have to. In fact, your pets are more likely to get bitten because mosquitoes have a little heat-seeking sense, and of course, pets' temperatures are higher than ours, and so they're going to go to the pet's nose, face, and little sensitive skin before they even bite you. So yes, you do want to protect your pet all year round, and mosquitoes actually like being indoors in colder weather as well, so they're more likely to actually come inside and bite you and your pet at that point in time. So in Texas, you're right, it's all year round for sure.
And I'm sure in Alaska, it's a different bottle of wax.
It's probably different in Alaska. I don't know. Practice there, so I don't know. But I definitely, and then I've heard it the same in things like Seattle area and the East Coast, but it is different everywhere you go. So again, talk to your vet as soon as you get a chance.
Yeah. You mentioned, you know, as far as, you know, cleaning the environment with the from a flea perspective, that's another thing that people do a lot in spring.
Yeah.
They're, you know, they get crazy on spring cleaning. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, what one of my recommendations was going to be, because I know we do this at the rescue, it's a, you know, it's a time where you can open things up, air things out, drag everything out of a building and not worry about an animal getting overheated or cold or whatever and really scour all your equipment.
Yes.
But we also have to be careful about what we do that with.
Yeah.
So I want to talk about like spring cleaning chemicals and stuff.
Absolutely. Certain cleansers can be dangerous both for respiratory, or if they lick them up, they can affect their esophagus or GI tract in serious ways and hospitalization kind of ways. And then also you might be pulling that kind of stuff out for things like, you know, pulling out your ant bait so you can get those fire ants under control. We've been seeing a rash of animals intoxicated by ant bait right now.
Oh, wow.
Because of course you just put the little sprinkle and you think it's all going to be okay. And then of course your nosy little dog has to go and sniff and eat the little cute sprinkle granules, which are sweetened because that's what ants like. And so pets love to also try that out. And that can cause seizures and tremors and other things as well. So yeah, be super careful about the areas that you're treating, that you're cleaning. If you think your pet may have dust mite allergies or you test and they find that out, that's obviously we're going to shake up those dust mites when we're pulling all that stuff out.
Oh, yeah, stirring up the stuff.
The Christmas tree and the buckets and things like that. It'll stir up. And then, yeah, I mean, certainly, obviously, things like bleach and Lysol and that sort of thing. If you leave it in the toilet, you know, make sure and close the door to the bathroom or flush the toilet before they go. Because, you know, my dogs like to drink out of the toilet. And I'm sure yours do, too. So
yeah.
That's a time where they often get intoxicated with that kind of stuff.
Yeah. I don't run into that too much at the rescues because we're on septic. We try not to put stuff. But, boy, you know, I'd be kind of the queen of bleach-related stuff.
It's such a good
kills so many germs, but nobody needs to be drinking it.
From the hardest germs to kill and more. So, yeah, I understand why you're using it. But you're right, it can cause some respiratory and GI issues for animals. Yeah.
I think two people need to think about putting all that stuff, because I'm terrible about putting things away. And the other day, there was a puppy. Now, granted, the spray bottle only had water in it.
Okay, great.
Okay, but, you know, I left it on the coffee table. Mm-hmm. A puppy grabbed it. Mm-hmm. Next thing you know, she's chewing the nozzle off of it. So now I've got that plastic thing. Luckily, she didn't swallow it. But, you know, if she'd have busted into that and it had been full of chemicals.
Yeah, or the possibility of a foreign body from the tip of that spray bottle all the way to what's the chemical going to do to her guts, thinking as it was water. But you're right. I mean, those things happen. We get busy. The phone rings right in the middle of what you're doing. So, yeah, just take a half a second and go, okay, what's this little troublemaker you're going to get into and do your best to keep them safe. Maybe throw them in their crate. You know, the crate is always a great place to babysit for safety. Like, you know what? I'm going to clean up this whole part of the house and you can sit in your crate with a Kong stuffed with something frozen and delicious and, you know, cookies and peanut butter.
Stay there until everything is put away, flushed, and whatever
you can eat this,
needs to be done.
Yeah.
I was talking to somebody the other day about litter boxes, and it's like at some point litter boxes, especially if you're using plastic ones, but even if it's other materials, it's just like, it's done. It's scratched enough. It's full of germs, you know, time to replace. So I think spring is a great time to say, is this bowl too nasty to rehabilitate?
Especially things that have little crevices in there. You're right. Or the cattails have created crevices in there. Yeah. It's probably a good idea to replace that. Certainly bacteria can be involved or gross as it might be, maybe the cat is fine because he's finicky, but then the dog has to go and lick out of the litter box or eat those little Tootsie Rolls, and then that might be, you know, if it's bacteria that's been sitting there a long time, really not good for their gut, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, regular poop is it, but let alone it's been sitting there for a while, litter box poop. Yeah.
Yeah, I used to have a dog that used to like to sneak past the bed while I was laying in there sleeping. He'd get down on his, like, on his belly and scooch, and I'd let him get right to the edge of the door, and I'd say,
She caught me.
I did catch you. So another thing that people love to do in the spring is plant things. My daughter, Kelsey, is notorious for getting really excited about plants. And then when it gets hot, suddenly they're not so much fun anymore. And I will admit that I am one of those bad pet parents. When we lived in Friendswood, my entire back fence inside my yard was just a wall of oleander.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Which I know is toxic to pets.
It can be, yeah.
And, you know, I got complaint. Well, I never had a problem because nobody ever messed with them. However,
they have no chance of the potential.
And we also had a sago palm.
Oh, yeah. Those are the worst. Those are the worst.
I think it's important that people realize, A, what is toxic in their yard,
you
know, especially if you move into a new place. Mm-hmm. And don't assume that because one animal doesn't mess with it today, because I've had that happen too, where that thing's been there for 10 years and now you decided you wanted to chew on it.
I think that happens more than anything else. It's like we get complacent, I think is the word you're going to use.
And,
but then we maybe dug underneath of it and planted a little something there, and they go, oh, mom's messing with it. Now I have to go mess with it, because they're very nosy and curious.
They're busybodies.
They are busybodies. Or let's say that, you know, spring is good weather. People are traveling and family came in for Easter or whatever, and they're going to bring their pet. Maybe their pet puppy or their other animal who's not been exposed to those things is going to mess with it. So, yeah you want to be on high vigilance. They have these neat apps you can identify plants with now.
Yes, I have that on my phone.
That's so neat. Cool. I love it.
You can't trust it 100%, but
for common
plants, yeah.
It will do. Okay, yeah. So good. So, and that's one way to do that. Yeah, sago palm, honestly, those are just basically they cause liver failure very quickly, and it's very hard to get them over that. And so I would recommend just pulling a sago palm out if your dog is going to be exposed to it. Oleander is very interesting. Fresh oleander is very bitter. But if you trim the oleander bushes and you leave the leaves down, then they get a little sweet by the sun. When the sun dries them out, that's when they become a problem. So, you know, still, if you think you have that much of a busybody of a dog, you know, get the oleander out of there. But certainly if you're going to trim them, take all the trimmings out of the way so then it'll dry up and become a hazard to your pet.
Yeah, it's amazing that it's, you know, it can be certain parts of a plant
or
certain conditions. Like you said, it's fine when it's this way or less attractive, and now it's more attractive.
Yep.
Other things I had on my list, and, you know, I think people really just need to go out and research what's in their yard,
because your yard.
You're not going to memorize every single plant, but lilies are definitely something to be worried about. I know we used to have a lot of rhododendrons. I don't know if they even have those in Texas, but back east, rhododendrons were one.
They have like a little cone of bushel of flowers on
them. Like a little, almost, I don't know, but it's a cluster of flowers, and apparently those can cause vomiting, diarrhea, and sometimes even cardiac issues. And daffodils, that's another
spring. All your lilies. Daffodils is kind of a lily, but all your lilies can cause tummy issues. And of course, cats are actually, they violently react to those, both respiratory and heart type of issues with them. So, yeah, definitely don't let your cats around any lily family type of thing.
And be careful about bringing that stuff in the house, because sometimes you cut things in the yard, bring it in. I've lost a lot of really good vases that way for my kids.
Yes, I bet.
But yeah, because they're going after the flowers.
Yes, yes.
So definitely something to keep an eye out with those plants. So speaking of being outdoors, my number five hazard area to watch out for was your fencing. That's something that I've noticed is that, you know, granted, it's pretty mild most of the time around here in Houston, but, you know, in some parts of the country, spring might be the time where you're leaving the dog outside or you're letting, hopefully you've got a nice safe cat yard, but you're letting the cat outside.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great time to really
test the integrity of the fence. At least,
You know, what kind of critters have been digging under it, or it's rusting or whatever it might be. Do you see a lot of people escaping, like, losing their pets this time of year?
And the reason, too, is some pets actually have, like, storm anxieties, and maybe they've been testing the fence before, but if they start to hear weather change, they break through a weak part of the fence, and scary stuff. I mean, not just losing your pet, but they can be hit by a car and all those things. And so we end up seeing them. Well, she's never done that before. And then the weather change just flipped on us, you know. Last night we had a terrible windstorm. And as I was driving here, there was a lot of fences down. So maybe before you just let the dog out in the backyard on their normal pee break, especially after something like that, put your eyes on the fence and just make sure the fence integrity is good.
I think even checking, too, I've noticed we have literally a brand new fence in the backyard. Mm-hmm. But things do start to settle and the gate is heavy. And so the other day I had let the puppies and everybody out in the backyard because it was not, the wind was breezy, mosquitoes away.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, I call everybody in and I see the puppies outside the fence. Now, luckily they came to me, but if we were living on a busy street, they could have easily been run over. They could have gotten stomped by the, we always have to worry about donkeys. Angry donkeys that go after dogs. So just, you know, checking those gate latches, things like that. And that's a good point as far as the integrity of the fence, because if you've got one of those wooden backyard fences and it's been there since you moved in, you know, 10 years ago,
eventually
it could be right on the verge of blowing over, and the next thing you know that they're gone.
One weather pattern will change that up.
Yeah.
Also, drought can weaken the main posts of the fence, and sometimes drought will cause a fence to lean in. A dog will, if there's something to test, they'll find a way to test it.
Yeah. So. And especially if you've got a new pet. I mean, I've done this a couple of times. I think my friend Lori talked about it on one of the episodes of how, you know, she adopted a dog from us at the rescue, and she was a real escape artist. And so I literally, instead of just having her take the dog, is like, let me come over and just look at the fence, because I think sometimes people underestimate, you know, it's just this little space under the fence, or you get a new dog and you think, oh, my yard is fenced. Well, is it really?
Yeah.
Is it sufficient? Because I've seen dogs go under fences that they should not, and definitely
theoretically,
cats. I've seen cats, my cat squeezes through, my blind cat mm-hmm. squeezes through the gate going to my bedroom, and I kid you not, like, it's, she's wide. I don't understand it.
She defies physics.
She defies physics, exactly. I don't know if she's dislocating her hips as she goes through, yeah, but
she's a slinky one. That's
why they do. And horses do that too.
Yeah,
they've been known to roll under a fence, escape
accidentally, and go, "Oh, how did I do that?" And then they'll just wander around.
Yeah, my pony did that yesterday. I don't know if she rolled under, but she hasn't done it for years. And that's the thing you need to think about. Like, oh, just because it's been like that for years. Mm-hmm. She used to like to go to play with the donkey two houses down. And we thought we had taken care of all of
what
that.
What a social pony.
Yeah, it hasn't happened for years. And then all of a sudden, the other 2 days in a row, she's been in the neighbor's yard trying to get over there.
Yeah.
So it's like, now we got to do the whole. And we got a lot of fence. We have 7 acres, people. So, you know, I have an excuse, not really, but I have an excuse that I haven't walked my fence. But if you live in a suburban or a, mm-hmm. you know, urban area,
definitely don't
get out there and look at your darn
fence.
Make sure it's safe. And then also, you know, with cats, don't assume your cat can't climb the fence because
they're pretty amazing. Speaking of defying physics, I've seen them hit an 8-foot fence like nothing. And they're just at the top observing the neighbors. Everything is fine. And it might be until the neighbor's dog comes in, puts pressure on the fence and knocks the cat down. And gets the cat, you know, so mm-hmm. lots of reasons to be careful with that. And then, you know, I'll probably just stay out and observe a cat because they're nearly impossible to keep in contained.
Yeah. I actually had a company just sent me, and I won't name it yet because I haven't tested the product yet, mm-hmm. but a roller system.
Mm-hmm.
But
coyote rollers.
Well, it's different. It's different than a coyote roller. It's like a different design.
Okay.
But it's like you have to. It has to be a certain kind of fence.
Yeah.
Because it would have to be exactly what you said, the kind where a cat would leap and try to grab the top, and then it's going to roll away.
Right.
But if I'm climbing a fence, then I'm just going to climb over
it. Go right over it.
So don't assume. And that actually brought up another thing. We were talking about plants before. You know, that little tree that your dog couldn't mm-hmm. get on top of and get out now. Yeah. Or we decided to move the trash cans, and now it just makes a perfect place for them
to jump
out. So
they're so smart. I mean, we love our animals, but
why do they want to leave? Explain that to me.
They
have it so good.
I know. They have no excuse, but it's their hunting instincts and their territorial instincts that are just natural. It's not you.
Even
it's
if not they're spayed and neutered.
If they're spayed and neutered, they can still be a little bit territorial. And probably depends also on the breed. Certain breeds are more likely to be hotheads, you could say, than other breeds. And it's not our fault. They're trying to run away from us. They're just curious. Sometimes they're bored. Maybe they want to go for more walks or runs or dog park visits or whatever is safe to socialize them and burn off that energy. Because otherwise they will find ways to burn off the energy in mischievous ways, like your fence and other things.
Yeah.
And plants are not supposed to eat.
And we've talked about that too, related to exercise, is that, you know, letting them out in your yard, they're not getting, most animals are not getting sufficient exercise. So, you know, you got to figure that yard after a while, they've sniffed every bush.
Yep.
They've overturned every rock.
True.
You know, it's boring now.
What's outside there? Been overturned.
Yeah. That's good on the other side.
And I do think they get a little extra little energy burst when the weather turns nice. You know, my dogs will go running out the door and see who can get out there first and run their laps or circles. You know, when it's winter, it's like, let me pee and come back inside.
As quick as possible.
Yeah, exactly.
Or God forbid it's raining. Nobody wants to leave the patio.
Don't want to get dirty. Yeah. But yeah, so when the weather changes, you're right. Springtime, we got to be extra cautious.
Yeah. So I want to talk about another area of caution that came up was just kind of being out and about in the spring. You know, it's weather's nicer. Let's take the dog to the river. Mm-hmm. Let's take the dog on a hike. Let's mm-hmm. take the dog to the park.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of factors that mm-hmm. play into that. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that I wanted to talk about was the, you know, on leash, off leash.
Yeah.
I'm not a believer in off-leash. I don't care how good your dog is trained. I think there's going to be something that's going to come up that's going to distract them
or get
their attention.
Put them in the danger zone.
Exactly.
Yeah, if they're not paying attention to you and they're more like, I'm going to chase this thing way across possibly busy traffic road or whatever it might be. Yeah, I would say that, you know, the first restriction is just your local law there.
Yeah.
I mean, most of the time, it's going to be leash required unless it's an actual dog park where it's leash off kind of thing. You know, if you're at you know, let's say you're 7 acres and it's not quite fenced in the first time you and your pet are enjoying that. You probably want to have at least something called a lunge line or a long leash. Mm-hmm. We kind of adapted that from horse training, but you can use it for dog training for recall. And they're just basically a super long leash, so they can still have a chance to explore, but you can still send the signal down the leash that you need them to come back. And then if they, that's actually one of the baby steps of training recall in a dog. And so, yeah, that's one thing for sure. As far as those laws go, I mean, I think that's pretty rare that you're going to find a place that's going to let you let your dog off a leash in like a public park or something like that. And unfortunately, it's not always like your dog is the aggressor or the problem. Sometimes it's, you want to keep them away from other animals who don't have good social skills. Mm-hmm. And so that leash isn't just keeping them from being the aggressor, it's keeping your pet from inadvertently being attacked or something along those lines.
Yeah. I would think, too, also, depending upon where you live, mm-hmm. like I know I've got a friend that just built a house, like I guess you'd call it the Hill Country, Canyon mm-hmm. Lake area, mm-hmm. whatever
it was.
I love
that area. So pretty.
And literally, they have people up there that train dogs not to mess with snakes because they mm-hmm. get constantly, mm-hmm. you know, and it's not that we don't have snakes here, yeah. and you might have snakes wherever you are,
right,
but
right.
there's an abundance of yeah. very poisonous snakes. Yes. And so, you know, it's
and
even in your own yard, it mm-hmm. could be.
They come out of hibernation in spring, and mm-hmm. their venom has been building up over time, so their bites are actually worse in the spring, mm-hmm. more deadly. So, yeah, it's important. If they have a training option, that's great to teach dogs to not do that, but yeah, dogs are like 5-year-olds. Yeah, their curiosity is just insatiable sometimes, and that's where you have to be the protector. Like, do I really want to let him sniff under that bush? Do I really want to let him sniff under that?
Why is he so interested?
Why, you know, those body postures, if he's still and his ears are still and up and the tail is, you know, doing a different sort of quick whip to it. Those mm-hmm. are all signs that he's found something you haven't found yet, and you better make sure it's okay for him to mess with whatever it is.
Definitely. That's it. Well, and then skunks too.
You know, my gosh. It's like, yeah, luckily skunks aren't deadly, but man, that can be
weeks. Make your life, if you know, people think that they know what skunk smells like because they ride in their car and you smell skunk.
Yeah.
There is nothing like the fresh.
Yeah.
It's horrible. We had our Doberman Pinscher got sprayed in our backyard. I mean, there was no, and before anybody even knew what happened, he flew into the house, across the house.
Oh, no.
I mean, I literally slept with my shirt like this and I sprayed perfume on my shirt.
I believe you. I believe you. Yeah. Even if you use, there's a lot of these great recipes online and for getting skunk smell off, but it'll linger still in their fur and oil for easily 3 or 4 weeks.
Yeah. And the worst thing you can do is, which is exactly what I did, was like, go throw that dog in the pool.
Oh, no.
And it's like, that just seals everything in, apparently. But yeah, the point being is that there's, you know, we talked about the bugs, but mm-hmm. there's a lot of critters that are out and about.
Yes. Big time.
And then, you know, even just hazards, maybe. Yeah. You know, you're walking on the trail, your dog cuts its foot or
gets
a... this happened to my dog Buddy one time. We went to, I think we were in Corpus, wherever we were. Mm-hmm. It was actually his last Christmas. We went to the beach.
Aww,
he was such a good
little
dog. But he got out and got burnt. He was covered in burrs.
Oh,
and they weren't, you know, deadly or anything, but, you know, there's thorns, there's sharp objects.
Yes, absolutely.
Things that you have to worry about.
Right. Yeah, I think you're right to plan just a little bit of like, hey, maybe a little wound cleansing kit. Maybe I did get that antihistamine dose from my vet and have that ready to go. Yeah, maybe something. I like that idea you had about some sort of maybe like a harness for your own body to be able to carry your pet in case they can't walk out of a hiking situation or trail or a rural situation. That's a great idea. So, yeah, maybe planning ahead for that. And then as far as those wounds go and things like that. I mean, there's nothing like cleaning a wound right then and there, not letting it sit and fester until you see the doctor.
Even I would assume, like, you know, my dog gets a cut, so mm-hmm. I'm gonna walk him into the stream and mm-hmm. clean his foot. I
mean, yeah.
I'm like, it's like, hopefully you have a water bottle with you and you can use some clean water.
Water bottle. I mean, I think something easy and handy to know is you can clean a wound with just very lightly soapy water, like maybe like one pump of a hand soap into maybe about a liter of warm water, and you can use that to rinse off a wound with. You can also use betadine, easy to get, or, you know, monkey's blood, easy to get over the Walgreens, CVS pharmacy counter or whatever. And usually you'll want to dilute that. So you can carry a little tiny bottle of betadine like this and then add it into, let's say, a water bottle and squirt that wound and flush that wound out real good. And then certainly wrap it with clean and dry bandaging material, not wrapping it too tight to cut off circulation, but just enough to keep the dirt and the grass and the pet from licking it.
And I think you probably need that mostly if you were not, like if you were out on a trail taking some big hike or in a national park or something where
camping,
you're not going to be quick to get to
civilization
to get
back
to the house or whatever.
You're right. Certainly if it's going to be a minute before you can get to there, I would say like if it's going to be, you know, more than 2 hours before you can get to some help like that, I would probably get a good cleaning in there. And then of course, keeping your pet from licking on it, you know, you may need to stop at a pet store and get an e-collar or something like that, you know, just to keep him from licking on
it. The cone of shame.
The cone of shame. But it works. It sure can keep you from having some major issues or even repeat surgeries or losing a limb. So they can be really important.
Yes.
So, you know.
It is a good tool.
Overcome the cone of shame fears that we have. Yeah.
And I don't know if we said this. If we did, we can cut it out. But just, you know, I think brushing up on your obedience before you take any of these outings, because, you know, to me, like one of the most valuable, other than come, is leave it. You know, that's
leave it and recall. Yes, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I don't think we did cover that, but I think that's important because a part of dog training is really just understanding dog behavior. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, yes, you can train your pet to be good and behave, but you also want to kind of observe the other animals around. And do you really want your dog to be, you know, involved with a dog that may be acting a little bit too territorial, a little too aggressive? Like, for example, if I go to the dog park, I don't go right in. I walk around the dog park and I'm honestly kind of spying on everyone else's pets. Like, is this dog going to possibly get in a fight with my dog, for example?
Yeah. You know, we actually did a whole episode on, so for those who are listening to this, if you did not listen to the episode on dog etiquette. See, I'm like completely opposed to dog parks.
They're very dangerous. Honestly, I get a lot of my business from dog parks because dog fights and then there's the scary stuff. Sometimes dogs fight to the death, you know, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So yeah, absolutely. And yeah, dogs.
Because you don't know the person that's got their dog in
there.
It's
hard.
But you can encounter dogs anywhere. I see it all the time. There's a lady that I've seen on TikTok several times that's out riding horses in England. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the off-leash dog that's like trying to attack her horse.
Yep.
And it's like, who's going to lose this battle? But it's dangerous for everybody involved.
Yes,
and
it is.
Like, if your dog doesn't listen to you, don't let it off a leash.
Yes, absolutely, for sure. good point. I mean, there's these restaurants where you can bring your pets on leashes and they sit on the patio. That's a great place for an issue. So know your dog etiquette. And what else? You know, certain campsites, things like that, public parks, you know, again, people should keep their pets on the leash, but they don't always, or sometimes the pets get out of the collar because maybe the collar's on too loose or they're not using a proper kind of collar, which it was probably covered in your dog etiquette episodes.
I don't know that we really got into a bunch of gory detail, but I might have mentioned, I mean, I think I've mentioned before about liking those
Martingale
collars.
Love them.
Because especially if, you know, if your dog, if you don't want to worry about putting a collar that's too tight,
mm-hmm.
or your dog's neck is bigger than its head,
mm-hmm.
then
yeah.
no tightness of a leash is going to stay, mm-hmm. or a collar is going to stay on a dog.
That's right.
If their neck is bigger than their head.
Yeah. And and I can't tell you how many dogs Houdini out of body harnesses, too.
Mm.
Not to mention, sometimes body harnesses don't really get the message to your pet when you're trying to give them direction, like calm down, behave, or sit still, or whatever it might be. So Martingale is one of the best ones, for sure, to get your dog's attention, but also allow it to have some comfortable relaxation time when you're not putting pressure on that collar.
Or use two things. I mean, as much as I don't like, you know,
the inconvenience
choke chains or whatever, mm-hmm. especially nowadays, you know, there's better alternatives, better. We know better in many instances, but I kind of like that as a backup. Like I'd hook the leash to my dog's collar, but also to that,
mm-hmm.
because although the collar might come off,
mm-hmm.
the choke chain wouldn't. So, you know, Martingale and a harness or a harness and a collar and hook it to both.
Yeah.
Better to be safe.
It's a double leash system, where the leash actually goes kind of over your shoulder, like a purse strap almost,
mm-hmm.
and the one hook hooks onto the collar and one hooks to like a body harness or an alternative attachment.
Yeah.
And I think those are pretty neat because you're right. It's nice to have a backup in case one thing slips off or the other slips off.
Yeah. Well, that also, on that same front, now we're going down a product rabbit hole, but those hands-free leashes that are kind of like a waist and sometimes they've got a fanny pack or whatever, that way you're not worried about, because you know how you are. You're trying to take pictures with your phone, you got your leash, you got and then next thing you know, you're dropping the leash.
Yeah, and they're off they go.
Off they go, exactly.
Yep.
So, yeah, definitely need to look into your equipment and, you know.
Try it and test it in the backyard before it gets crazy.
That's right, before you get out and about. So we're getting into our last couple of tips here. Hydration. obviously in Texas, last year we had the most brutal summer ever. And so you got to be super careful with your, you know, of course we were super careful with the horses and making sure they had plenty of water and the dogs, you know, when it's that hot, I don't leave them outside. So they've got, but plenty of access to water.
Access to water. You could even have water plus something frozen, like, you know, a frozen ice cube just made of like an old butter tub or something like we used to do in the old days. I don't know if anyone does that, or your milk jug or whatever. Cut that in half and freeze that. Another thing, speaking of Texas weather, is you might go out in the morning and it's cool and it feels good, but the clouds roll and the sun comes out and all of a sudden it's too hot to be outside. I mean, just be honest with yourself, like, hey, is this too much for this little guy or whatever it might be?
Sorry, the pavement being hot. So this tip should be more about hydration. It should just be like heat.
Yes.
You know, heat
advisories.
Yeah.
Yes. And then certain breeds are more susceptible to dehydration. And that includes your brachiocephalics, your smush face dogs. They have a hard time cooling and they're trying to cool and they're expiring all their fluids out sometimes. And then not only can they get dehydrated, but they can obviously get heat strokes. Yeah. And then senior pets have a harder time with hydration, and little tiny baby things, you know, anything less than probably about 5 months old can easily dehydrate. So if you have a young puppy or young kitten, you know, keep an eye on their hydration level. Cats are terrible about drinking water sometimes too. So you have to kind of sneak it in there, maybe in the wet foods or canned foods. You can add additional water if you know they're going to be exposed to the sun or the heat.
Because I've been contemplating, I bought the insert for my window for my bedroom.
Ooh, like a catio type of insert?
And what kind of thing, you know, I thought about maybe making some tunnel to go to the aviary, but it's a pretty good distance, so I'm contemplating that. But then, there's that concern, like, what if they sit out there and then it's too hot?
And
or they're in the direct, even though it's got a sunshade on it, it doesn't cover every angle.
When the sun is at a certain angle, it might blast through there. Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Sometimes they're just too dumb to get in the shade.
They are, because they would rather hunt that bird, like they can actually get to it, but they can't.
And
they'll sit out there. And that's the same for our pets. For example, those people will say, when they come in for a heat stroke or something like that, well, he just kept chasing the ball. I thought he would lay down and rest if he didn't want to chase the ball. Their desire to please us is more than their desire to live from a heat stroke, it seems like. You're just like, really, guy? And sure enough, they will. They'll keep playing even though they're putting themselves in the danger zone until if they're too late, kind of a thing. So you may have to tell them, hey, it's time to take a break. Let's sit in the shade. Let's drink some water. Mm-hmm. Let me spray that water hose under your belly. You know, they cool off real well if you get their bellies wet. Dogs.
Yeah.
Cats will murder you if you try to wet them, I suppose.
Yeah.
But aside from that, you know, you can do fans, portable fans, all kind of things like that. They have these water cooling air conditioners. I think you put water in there, and as it blows through, it cools off the air and it cools off.
There's one that's like, it's as if the guy just took a cooler and made an air conditioner out of it.
Oops.
But it's portable, so that's kind of cool.
Check that out.
But
that way you can prevent some dehydration or water loss. But of course, getting water into them is great. Or sometimes if they don't want to drink water, you can freeze chicken broth, low sodium chicken broth, make ice cubes out of that.
Mm-hmm.
Just something tempting for them that they'll think they're getting a treat or a snack, and you're really just trying to hydrate them.
Yeah. So watching, what would be some, and this could be a whole nother episode, I'm sure, but like, I know we were at an event this weekend with kittens and it was the highest temperature was 75. I mean, I don't even know if it was 75, so it wasn't super hot, but these animals, these kittens are coming from an indoor, you know, situation where
they're people acclimated.
It's like probably 68 degrees, let's say. And so we were really careful about keeping them in the shade and watching for signs of, like, if your cat's panting, that's
Again, cats don't pant. So their little feet could do, they also cool through their little foot pads, so you can put them on, let's say, a cooling pad. They make these, they're almost like a very thin ice pack is what they look like. You put them in the freezer and you can probably keep some of those, and they'll find themselves a spot on there if they're comfortable. And if they don't want it, they'll go off of it, and that's fine. That means they're cool
enough. And you can use those for dogs too.
Oh, definitely. And they even make them like crate size, so whatever your crate size is, you can order them that way as well. So there's that. Yeah, for sure. And then again, you know, just packing enough liquids, not just for yourself but for your pets. So like you were saying, there's all kinds of coolers and there's all kinds of special water, looks like a water bottle, but then a little thing kind of falls out.
It's like a little bowl and door that tips
it's
down.
It's smart. I love it. And very handy, you know? So, I would say just prepare and plan ahead is a big part of that.
Yeah. What about the sun? So I never really thought about sun protection for dogs. I have a donkey. She's mostly white. Her name is Cow. She has spots. I did not
name
her.
That's a good name. Oh, I like that name.
And she looks like a cow with those kind of spots.
Yeah.
But her... And she was almost unhandleable for the most part. But her nose just peels, and I'm like, that is not good, all that peeling. So we have sunscreen, and I try to get it on her. It's a little bit dicey, but I never really thought, I've never had a, I'm prone to the black dogs for the most part.
That's your
black ones, brown
preference.
It's kind of been my thing, but yeah. You know, I do have a white dog, but because she's a squishy face, I don't leave her out in the sun.
And that's smart. Anyways, just because her break is a phallic.
But I never thought
point.
About putting sunscreen on a dog.
They do make dog and cat safe sunscreen, and because they can get sun-induced skin tumors like we can, I definitely think it's a great idea. And then even dogs that maybe aren't going outside, but they always sunbathe in that one spot where the sun comes through the window, you know you're going to find them there when you come home or whatever chores or errands you're running. That's the kind of dog, too, that could use some sunscreen on their belly and on their faces. And some of those tumors can get kind of nasty and maybe even go internally if you let them sit on the that pet, so why not prevent it if you can?
And you're pretty much talking about places where the skin, where the fur is
thinner,
right? Yeah.
Definitely where the fur is thinner, or if they're just a very fair-skinned or coated dog, you know, for sure. Like, you know, boxers come in white, and they come in brindle and fawn, and those lighter ones, for sure. We do see a lot of skin, sun-related skin masses, so I do think that's a great idea.
And I just want to make sure that you said that there is dog sunscreen, because you don't want to put human sunscreen.
I wouldn't use a person one unless it, I mean, I always make sure it's a dog one. Yes, exactly.
Because they're going to lick it.
Yeah, yes. And they're, you know, they have these new sunscreens that kind of, they're almost dry on contact. That's what you're looking for. The pet one's going to be dry on contact. You don't want like a sun lotion, sun block that's oily or greasy. They will lick that off. And probably you'll have diarrhea and vomiting in no time.
Reminds me of when I was first trying to get the sunscreen on the donkey. It's like, because she couldn't really touch her, but she likes treats.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, for those of you who are watching this on video, I got
slight
a handful
hands.
Of treats and a handful of like lotion. human sunscreen. I got to look into donkey sunscreen. But it's like, okay, I've got one chance to get one swipe.
Did it work? You got better at it over time.
I got
time,
better
sure.
at it, or I ended up with a handful of greasy sunscreen.
Hey, you will never get a skin tumor on your
hands. On the bottom of my hand. Exactly.
Little stinker.
So, okay, all right. So we're going to watch out for the sun, get some sunscreen for our lighter skin. And I would think, well, even if, like, what if I have a black dog, but they're, you know, like around their noses?
Yeah,
they can
absolutely.
Still get it,
nose
right?
And tummy. It's usually around the nipples and right on the middle of the belly. Occasionally on things like ankles and the tips of their toes. Some dogs are black except for the tip of their toes, you know, that sort of thing. And I've had to remove toes to be able to get some of those skin masses off. So, yeah, if you've got a white tip little dog or a very thin-haired dog on the ankles or further down, I spray there too.
Mm-hmm. And cats. It just reminded me, my neighbor had cats that they came from another country. I forget where they lived, but one of them's white, and it's just an outside cat. Like, there's no keeping. And, you know, they've got 20 acres, but that cat has had to have its ears removed from the sun.
Absolutely.
Because it's really not handleable.
Yeah. Squamous cell carcinomas are common on ear tips on cats, and those can spread internally too. So, they're like, you know what? Let's just get the tip of the ear off before that goes anywhere. But yeah, I think that's a great idea to be able to prevent it by spraying those ears.
Yeah, or keep them out of the sun.
Or keep them out of the sun. Indoor cat would be great.
Yeah.
But you're right. Some cats are just like, I will not.
Yeah.
They are wild sometimes.
Always cooperative. My last one was just to kind of to wrap things up, was just being prepared for emergencies. And so we talked about, I mean, I think to reiterate the point, to have, it sounds like we need a first aid kit for the house and one to bring in the car, like one that's going to go in the backpack when you go.
Or make it the same one and just, you know, make it that it's portable, you know. I've seen people use, like, little makeup kits, and I've seen them use, like, little tool zippy pouches.
They actually make them. Like, you can go out and buy a dog. But who knows what all's in it, you know. But I did Google that the other day.
Maybe let's look at a few and you can put some wings on
it. See what's in there. Yeah, there you go.
Interesting.
And then I think also you had mentioned some things about having phone numbers and things like that handy.
Knowing your closest emergency hospital. Yeah. For example, I have some lovely clients of mine that have maybe the RV life, and they RV around the whole country. And before they get to their next destination, they already know they have all three dogs in the RV too. And so they already know where the emergency hospitals were close to them or the nearest veterinary school, because sometimes that's the emergency hospital close to you in some rural places.
Mm-hmm.
And so, that's smart. And then many of them have asked me to help them prepare a kit.
Mm-hmm.
And so we do. We prepare some anti-nausea medicine, anti-diarrheal medicine, just things that I know are safe for this pet and with their history.
So kind of like a customized kit based on that animal's history and
Exactly.
Issues.
And breed type. And yes, yeah. Issues. Maybe like they have joint problems. Maybe they have sensitive stomach problems, things like that. Yeah. So, I think that would be a great thing to plan ahead. But certainly if you're going to create the kit just for space sake, maybe make it where it's the same one as long as it's portable so you can take it in the camping gear with you or whatever spring break thing you're going to do.
Yeah.
The beach party.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Well, I'm hoping to have somebody on the show if I can find somebody. I have a couple people in mind to talk about natural disasters, but just to make the point here that, you know, depending on, like, we're in Texas.
Yeah.
Hurricane season, was it starting in June? It goes, June to October.
Yep.
So, you know, having your bug out kit, having your medical records for your pet on a USB drive that's in your bug out kit, medications up to date if there's a storm coming, that kind of thing is
important. I love all those ideas. We're utilizing a lot of technology in veterinary medicine now, and so our clinic has a app on your where you can look up all your pets' vaccines and whatnot. Blood work is on there, so that you may ask your local vet and see if they already set up some sort of app. But I would say easily 50% or more clinics have these now.
Yeah, that's a good
point. So that and as long as you got Wi-Fi or internet, you should be able to look it up. So that might be something to keep in mind.
And I think ID tags, too, that's another thing. People don't, especially if you're the kind of person that puts your identification tag with your rabies tag and then they rub together. I mean, those things
like
do wear off. And they break off sometimes, too. Like, I noticed the other day, it's like,
Where'd it go?
There was the little loopy thing was on there, but the tag was completely gone.
Yeah, I have seen some neat little Velcro type devices, almost like made of neoprene, like a divers type of material to hold all the tags together so they don't rub.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a good idea. Definitely microchipping your pet is a
Making sure that information's up to date.
Making sure the information's up to date, including emergency contact. Some of the microchip companies, depending on which one you get, actually cover emergency visits in the sense, like if your dog runs away and gets hit by a car or something, they'll cover some initial emergency care. So look into that, especially if you're going to be traveling. But yeah, if you have microchip, then even if their collar comes off or the tag disappears, they'll still be identifiable and protected and identified as yours, so no one decides to keep your pet. You know, that sometimes accidentally happens as well.
Accidentally.
Okay. But yes, microchipping is super helpful. Identification in any way, shape, or form is a good idea.
Okay. Yeah. Well, those were the tips that I kind of wanted to cover. Did you have anything else that I missed, you think?
I mean, I think the biggest thing is just planning ahead. Most of this, what we're talking about, is you don't want to discover your in the middle of a situation before you get into that situation. So, plan ahead on your landscape. Plan ahead on your, do I have that app that looks up my medicines and vaccines and whatnot? Plan ahead on your destination and where's the nearest vet hospital. So it's just good planning is going to definitely be worth its weight in a lot of gold. Yeah, for sure.
Very good.
All right. Well,
thank you, Dr.
Zhu. Thank you for being here again with us and for your wisdom and insight.
All right. Well, everybody, I hope you have a great spring. And hopefully this episode helps you prepare for that and make sure it's a safe and fun springtime and summer for you and your pets.
Thanks for listening to Starlight Pet Talk. Be sure to visit our website at www.starlightpettalk.com for more resources. And be sure to follow this podcast on your favorite podcast app so you'll never miss a show. If you enjoyed and found value in today's episode, we'd appreciate a rating on Apple. Or if you'd simply tell a friend about the show, that would be great too. Don't forget to tune in next week and every week for a brand new episode of Starlight Pet Talk. And if you don't do anything else this week, give your pets a big hug from us.